Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Thank you. As we come back here on our continuing our run of the daily Baseball America Podcast, we're joined J.J. Cooper here with Hudson Belinsky, and we're going to jump into, now that the playoffs are over, we're going to jump into the top 10s, and we will be the first to admit that we're skipping ahead in the line, because we rolled out the White Sox top 10 today, the first of our American League Central top 10s. American League East fans, if you're a Yankees fan, a Red Sox fan, a Rays fan, we'll keep Blue Jays fan, Orioles fan, we're going to get to you. I promise we're going to get to you, but it's not going to be today. Today we're going to jump in. Hudson wrote our White Sox top 10, and we kind of felt like there's a pretty good hook for this as we kind of head into the offseason. We have free agency coming, and this is, I would not even say probably one of, I think it's easily to say this is one of the worst free agent pitching classes, especially starting pitching classes, I should say,
absolutely,
of all time.
Absolutely.
That being said, if there was a trade target who could change up the market as far as starting pitching, the White Sox have him in Chris Sale, who, very well documented, had some run-ins with his front office last year, took some scissors to some uniforms, and you know, everything was not all well on the South Side last year. So Hudson, kind of as we start this, kind of, I mean, before we jump into the top 10, I'll kind of ask it to you this way. Where the White Sox are right now, where the AL Central is right now, obviously the Indians are the reigning AL champs. They didn't win the World Series. They took it to Game 7 against the Cubs. The Royals won the World Series 2 years ago. The AL pennant has come out of the AL Central 4 of the past 5 years. None of those have come to the South Side of Chicago. Where the White Sox are right now, should they consider or should they trade Chris Sale, do you think?
Yeah, so this is like when I first filed it, and just, I just write very positively and like look at the positive outcome possibilities, right? And so like when, and I sent it into JJ, and it was like, well, here's the avenues for this team to succeed. If this, and this, and that go right, then maybe they're competing for a wild card spot, is sort of how I saw it. But when there's so many vast uncertainties and things have to go, players have to perform basically at their peak level and bounce back, and have
help because there's not much depth, and
so there have to be some surprises there that we're not anticipating. So it's not a good outlook for 2017 or really 18 at this point.
And this is a team that has fallen. I looked this stat up last week when we were talking about this. 16 or more games back in the division. They finished 16 or more games back for the last 5 years. So we're not talking about a team that has battled for, you know, basically the division and fell just short. Mm-hmm. In most years of this decade, and basically in the Chris Sale era, mm-hmm. what they largely have been is, and also ran in that division, who usually is not right in the thick of the wild card race either. I mean, they have, you can't, you know, it's the best way to put it, I would say, is that you can't say, well, a team that, because they have Chris Sale and Jose Quintana, is going to battle for the division because they have that top of the rotation pitching, because they've had those guys. Those guys have pitched really well, and that hasn't been enough.
I think for sports fans everywhere, one of the most frustrating situations is when your team is constantly in the middle or back of the pack. And so, you know, is it?
And they haven't ever been awful either. They haven't
They had the 10th pick in 16, and their worst year was when they picked Rodon and picked super high. But even this year, they were kind of middle of the order down the stretch and finished in the mid 70s with wins. And so they're going to pick in the teens again. And
which, in some ways, I mean, again, and maybe this is something that's wrong with the structure of baseball right now, but much like it used to, you know, it always has been almost with the NBA for years, that's kind of in some ways the worst spot to be in. They don't get a protected pick. Their picks aren't protected.
I think especially now and we'll see how the CBA is going to change things, but I think when you look at the model kind of created by what the Astros and the Cubs and the Braves are doing right now, there's so much more incentive to kind of tear it all down and rebuild. Because not only do you have the incentive to pick high in the draft and have a high bonus international bonus pool, but you also have, you can take risks on toolsy players who, so
you can spread your risk.
This is Jonathan Villar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like Jonathan Villar is like on a good team or a middle of the order team that is competing for a wild card spot that season.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Villar probably can't afford to give too many at bats, or you can't afford to take too big of a chance on that guy.
Right. You won't come into the season saying he's a regular. Yeah.
You have no, I mean, if you're not trying to win in that individual season, you can afford to go take a chance on a player who has big tools and hasn't quite put them together. And maybe that player does put it together. And then, oh, now you have a tradable asset to continue this rebuild. So, like, if you're in that position, it's actually, it makes so much sense to rebuild.
At-bats become a much less scarce resource. Which, if at-bats and innings are not a scarce resource for you, it allows you to sort through. You saw what the Braves did last year with relief help where,
yeah.
Again, not that they got great prospects, but Hunter Cervenka was essentially free talent. They get Hunter Cervenka. They can put him in their bullpen. And then the Marlins needed something, so the Marlins traded Anthony Seymour, who was one of their top targets of the draft just a couple of years ago, really athletic speedster who... Okay, it may not all come together, but the Braves got him for essentially nothing.
Or even just look at Drew Pomeranz and Rich Hill, which fit into this starting pitching trade market, but Drew Pomeranz was essentially cost the Padres nothing to get, and mm-hmm. he turns into Anderson Espinosa.
Nice pickup.
A lot of other extenuating circumstances that we don't need to get into there. But Rich Hill cost you... essentially nothing if you're the A's. I mean,
1 year, 13 point whatever. What? Well, six, that, yeah, six, like, million.
Six, yeah, 1 year, 6 million. Which is nothing, and it's peanuts in this baseball market. So you can afford to take chances on players like that, and if they boom, then you have the opportunity to go out and reinvest and kind of redistribute your resources.
And if they bust,
nothing.
Okay, you won 62 instead of 66.
Fine.
You know, again, I do think that you could make a pretty strong argument that the White Sox are almost kind of stuck in the worst possible spot right now. Because, I mean, to give an example in their division, okay, the Indians are, the Indians not only have a better big league club than the White Sox, and I think that's pretty quantifiable.
Oh, sure.
By the fact that year in and year out.
They're runaway from a World Series championship.
They're runaway. They went to the 10th inning of the Game 7 of the World Series.
Yeah, almost literally as close as you could have gone.
But beyond that, and they were better than them. That wasn't a fluke. They were better than the White Sox the year before as well.
Mm-hmm. Deeper farm system.
And their farm system is significantly better than Chicago's right now. I think that's also, even after trading away Clint Frazier and Justice Sheffield. To acquire Andrew Miller, who they, by the way, still have for two more years under contract. So they're a better team. Okay. We don't know where Detroit's going.
The outlook is not good. But so what they do have for them is they do have Zach Collins.
Who number one prospect on our White Sox top 10. And I would say number one prospect, and it was by a pretty decent margin. Is that a fair way to put it?
Sure.
You got Zach Birdie's number two.
Yes.
Which, again, bad sign for your farm system. Is when you're, and again, they had these are two prominent dudes in the draft. This isn't that a fifth round pick made the top five or anything like that.
Yeah.
But when your top two prospects are two guys from the most recent draft.
Yeah, I mean.
That's a little bit.
It doesn't look good. I mean, there's also.
And those, I think, are clearly the top two guys.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think you could make an argument for Carson Fulmer.
Starter versus reliever, potentially him versus Birdie.
Yeah, and I am encouraged by some of the late season adjustments that Fulmer made, especially mechanically, getting rid of that earlier hand break, not necessarily kicking out front, losing balance and rushing
his
delivery. Some positive traits that point towards better command, and the statistical results are in there in his AAA finish. So there are positive signs there. He's a good prospect. Is he a top 100 prospect at this point? I'm not sure.
I mean,
he's not a slam dunk.
No, because the thing about it is that the concerns that were there when he came out of Vandy are still the concerns. And I would say that considering, and again, they moved him fast, but considering what he's shown so far, I would say that the concerns he showed out of Vandy have now become bigger concerns, because when he's coming out of Vandy, he was coming off this long track record of success with some, you know, the concerns about the body.
He had a very good junior spring as a starter.
Right. And that was at a premium program on the biggest stage in the SEC, key part of one of the best teams in college baseball, all that. You look at this now, and we're essentially a year and a half past that, and the concerns that he faced coming into the draft were, he's not very big. Can a guy with that kind of very, let's just call it, energetic delivery, can that succeed? Can he throw strikes consistently? Can he hold up? Is he going to have to be a reliever?
Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting here a year and a half post that draft, and I think it's very fair to say that all those questions are still there.
Yeah.
And so far, the early indicators are, and again, he may turn this around, but the early indicators are, no, so far, a guy with that kind of energetic of a delivery, that high effort of a delivery, that high tempo of a delivery, is not led to being able to throw strikes. And so far, again, short, you know, he's still 5 years away, 6 years away from free agency or anything like that. There's time to turn this around, but so far, and when they said, okay, well, can he help us right now? They ended up moving him to the pen to bring him up to the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't go so well. They're gonna.
Yeah, I mean, I think
we actually witnessed ourselves.
Yeah,
one of his worst.
We saw literally. I looked up his game logs. That was his worst outing.
And we saw him at his. I mean, that was just not good.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so the things with him. First thing I'll say in response to that is that, sure, he probably projects as a reliever at this point, but I do think he's still the best. I will still defend that pick at eighth overall in that draft class. I do think it's a good pick.
And that was a bad draft.
That's a really bad draft
class
with no college starting pitching. And this is the guy, if anyone was going to be a starter of that Tyler J, Dylan Tate, Carson Fulmer trio, I would argue had the best chance.
But this is an interesting kind of segue here, which is that the drafts are good. You know, the draft talent waxes and wanes. But
the eighth overall pick in 2015 is not the same as it is in 2017.
But that being said, you're also, though, everyone wants starting pitching, college starting pitching. I mean, that's something that's a very desirable trait. You know, that's a desirable demographic in the draft. And so, as you just said, really what we had in that draft were the top three guys on the college side were essentially all of them were guys who faced questions, is this guy a reliever? Is this guy a starter?
Mm-hmm.
And here we sit. Only one full season, one half and one full season later. And Tyler J, I mean, the question's still out there, but I think it's fair to say that if you were, and again, we'll be talking Twins top 10 coming up pretty soon, but I would say that the odds point to yes. The odds say that he's probably going to end up as a reliever. I think you could find a lot of people in the Twins organization who'd say, yeah, he probably ends up a reliever long term.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Tate, that was a disastrous first full season. Signs at the end of the year were good. He rebounded at the end. He rebounded at the end, though, when he was pitching in much shorter stints. And again, it is fair to say at this point, if you said a year plus out, is this guy someone who you're comfortable is going to be a starter? No.
No, I do think he could be an impact reliever and has value that
way. But he's a reliever. But Carson Fulmer's still the guy who had that group who has the best chance to start.
Fulmer's kind of weird because, like, Fulmer for me seems, and this is something that people I talked to brought up as well, seems that he fits better as a third starter. Like, he has a better chance to succeed as that than he does as a reliever, because I don't know if he necessarily profiles as a shutdown closer. He has it more of a middle relief to eighth inning type of ceiling.
I follow.
Whereas those other two, I think, have a chance to be more impactful relievers.
Is that partly because I've had this discussion with guys about do the Royals listen to Josh Stama, is that partly because with his tendency that there are going to be some base runners, like it's better almost in a starting role because he'll have stretches where of dominance and then 11 inning where it gets in a little bit of trouble where it's a little bit more of a less of a concern if he's going 5-6 than it is if he's going 1.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
why?
He also is just not a
you don't have an
light
eight.
Up,
I mean, don't have
blow
a
up velo guy by mm-hmm. big league standards.
Right.
He is when you go like when you go scout a college game and you see a guy touching 95, 96, and pitching 92, 94. That's like big velo in college. But if you go look at a big league game, the guys who are pumping gas in the seventh inning are throwing 97, 98 often. I mean,
yeah, or if not, they have some sort of like, I mean, it's a 70 at least. Like 70
they,
breaking
they have,
ball.
They have elite stuff. I mean, I don't think there's a, even when Fulmer was up and in a relief role, and you can talk about the innings and where he was at developmentally mm-hmm. and strength gains, but I don't think he ever showed you a true 70 pitch.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
I mean, so he's a guy who's pitching now with above average fastball and an above average, probably still an above average curveball. I mean, I would argue that it backed up a little bit this year, but his changeup got significantly better. And so that's
right,
so more of like he has a lot of weapons to get you out and navigate a lineup.
Much
but he doesn't
more so
have,
than,
I'm
okay.
going to come in and throw 15 pitches and shove the fastball down your throat. Like, it's not a, like, just for me, it's not a standard power closer
right.
type
arsenal. Well, I follow you. No, I agree with you. I don't think, again, you really, even in a short roll, in a short stint, you're not really saying, okay, 70 fastball, 70 breaker, 70 change. With
right. I mean, he's pitching 91, 94, and there were some 95s if you look at his pitch effects. It means, it's, so 95's in there.
Well, that's, I mean, the funny thing is when we talk about this, that's where you said we're lining these guys up. Fulmer has the best chance to start. But of the guys in your top five on the White Sox top 10, he's got, if you talk about a guy who could be a closer, he would have to rank out, say, probably third of that group. Because Birdie is, I mean, again, when you talk about a guy who could come in and just blow gas, well, that's
yeah.
Zach Birdie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 100 plus.
Yeah,
you know.
Sharp cheddar there.
Yeah. And then that's Alec Hansen when Alec Hansen's on his best, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who was up to 98 in his stretch run. And beyond
and
beyond
that fastball
velocity,
plays.
The
that
life
fast,
is,
yeah, that fastball
is
plays. I mean, that fastball plays better than
and
Fulmer's.
He's got tight spin breaking balls, and he flashes a changeup. So you think of this guy. You take a chance on him to start for
oh absolutely
a few years. I would say you don't give up on it until you have to. But should this guy need to move to the bullpen,
it's impact stuff in the bullpen.
It's closer type stuff. Now is his command gonna improve? That's the big question. And transitioning to professional coaching and some mechanical things with him like. This is a guy who didn't
early
know how to
signs.
Really come off of the rubber. Like this, is, there's it's like an infant delivery, and he's not a zero athlete. So I do think there's
early signs point to yes. I mean, like right now, he's already made strides compared to where he was.
Significant strides compared to even when he where he was in college. So there is a chance that the command's going to improve and continue to get better. Will the consistency of his off speed be there? That's who knows.
Right, because I mean, to give a little bit of background, we are talking about a guy who could have been a top five pick coming into last year. When you talk about the college, when you talk about a year where we're, you know, the starting pitching was a little better than it was in 15, but he came into that group as a guy who had potential top of the draft stuff.
Yeah.
Instead, he lost his starting job at one point during the season. He flashed. But he flashing generally was against more like the Kansas States of the world.
Yeah,
except
well,
that one UCLA.
Dodger Town.
Dodger Town earned him some money.
That was the second or third start of the year. And Alec Hansen pitched in a tournament in Southern California, I believe either at Dodger Stadium or at
yeah.
UCLA, somewhere down there and shoved. Mm-hmm. Struck out a ton of guys.
I mean, looked like at that point he was on point, you know, to do what everyone kind of expected. And then less than a month later, he was losing his job in the rotation. And then he got it back, and he showed flashes. But again, he showed a much more consistency. Now, he did it again somewhat. You know, a lot of that was in the Pioneer League, which is a tough place as far as because the ball flies. But he did the Pioneer League against guys who, in many cases, were less experienced than he was. But he still...
I would credit the White Sox for, first off, taking a chance on that guy. Because if that's your third pick...
Yeah, because second round, yeah.
Thrilled, because you can get a guy who has huge upside. Maybe he flames out and never makes it.
Zach Collins, if Zach Collins doesn't end up being a productive big leaguer, it'll kind of be a surprise, because you are talking about a guy who can hit, who's shown he can hit in the ACC, who has shown he can draw a walk, has shown he has power, and, by the way...
He's a better receiver than a lot of people give him credit
for. Better receiver than a lot of people give him credit for. And talk about perfect organization for this. In an organization that has been looking for a catcher for quite a while. Yeah. I mean, and there is no one in the organization right now that is blocking Zach Collins from being the catcher.
No, not at all.
No one. And so, he's the guy that you're counting on. You're counting on Birdie. If Birdie doesn't end up pitching... Maybe it's not closing even, but if Birdie doesn't pitch useful innings in your bullpen at some point,
he's got the stuff to get the best hitters out. It's that good. It's sitting 97 to 99.
Touching 102.
Usually, I mean, depending on when you see him from night to night, there's 102 in there. There's a frisbee slider that's upper 80s, and it's a changeup that flashes pretty well too. And, you know, there's athleticism, deception with a closed-off right-hander who works from the third base side of the
right. Although the delivery is one that you're like, okay, is he's done it so far? Can he go out and throw strikes? It's better than his brother, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, we have a guy who's in AAA and he's 21 at this point. So like, I feel pretty confident that he's going to at least have some outings next year in the big leagues where you're like, oh man, this guy's a premier reliever. He might have some outings where he gets blown up.
Well, the funny thing with that is that, like, again, I actually lost a bet in the office because I was betting that I thought he might, considering how the White Sox move guys, I thought he might make it to the, up in September. But,
well, hey, if they're in it in September and you have a guy like that in AAA, I doubt he's in the minor leagues.
The funny thing is that, again, this is one of those what ifs. If he had been, though, in that Carson Fulmer draft, I think that there would have been a lot of teams out there because, again, as you said, he's not a big guy, but he has three pitches.
I had some belief that he could be a starter, and I had some people tell me in the draft research process that they did see that as a possibility. It's just when you look at the value of impact relievers right now and how close he is to that and how the developmental process would be for him as a starter, because he didn't start ever in college.
Right.
And his role that he worked towards and had defined for him at college was to go pump gas and blow it by guys. And that worked for the most part. And so, like, he knows how to be a reliever. Mm-hmm. And so he's a pretty safe bet to be some kind of impact reliever, whether it's one of the best closers in baseball, which it could be.
We are talking about when we just came off of a postseason where we saw the value of, and again, whether it's you're the guy getting the saves or you're the guy pitching key innings in the fifth or sixth, seventh. Moment of truth guy. Either one is extremely valuable. If the White Sox over the next 5 years get to that point, he very easily, you see how he could fit very in a key role in a bullpen. And you are right. Like, I mean, the reality is that it's interesting. If you compare a guy like Spencer Adams, number four on this list, Spencer Adams over the course of a full season, mm-hmm. if it all breaks right, could have more value than Zach Birdie. Mm-hmm. But you get to the postseason, because Spencer Adams, I mean, if you really like Spencer Adams, you think he probably ends up being a nice innings eater.
I think there's a little bit more ceiling than that. But, like, I think the most realistic expectation for him would be quality fourth starter.
Right. I mean, the velo, we have not seen, like, basically when he was in high school, you'd see flashes of it, and the idea was, if he gains a tick or two here, like, and it becomes more consistent, then he's a front-end guy.
That's still really the idea is, like, I mean, we got to remember, what is this guy, 14 draft?
Yeah.
14 high school draft out of... Georgia. I mean, this is not.
But you said, as you said, out of Georgia. It's not. This is not. He came out of Montana, and
right. This is not.
I would say. I would put it that. I would say that it's not impossible, but the number of guys, who with the track record like Spencer, who've already had success, who already have been durable. Like, this is not a guy who came out and he wasn't strong enough for you to send him out. Him, you know, to full season ball. You had to worry, you know. This is, I think, more likely kind of what he pitches at now. He may gain a half a tick or whatever, but I'd say it's unlikely at this point to think that he's going to gain a tick or two.
He's not going to be pitching with a 70 fastball suddenly. This is not how he does have a projectable look to his body, but I didn't expect him to throw on 5 miles an hour. That you were talking about the sitting velocity going from 88 to 92 with some threes in there to maybe he gets to sitting 90-92, and so he can comfortably navigate the lineup a couple times through with a solid average fastball for a starter at least.
Right.
So that's more what we're talking about, and I think that with his athleticism and quality of his off-speed pitches, he has a chance to play a little bit better than a number four in his peak.
Right.
That said,
that's kind of what we're talking about.
That said, we're comparing that to Zach Birdie. Zach Birdie is in AAA, is knocking on the door, and has...
And there's no, by the way, and there's no projection to his stuff because you don't project above an 80.
You don't, but, oh man, when you look at him from him, his stuff as a sophomore to where it was as a junior, that's where you saw just such tremendous growth in that 1 year. And even going back to that, as from freshman to sophomore to junior, but the trajectory on Birdie is actually really good.
And the thing about it is we're talking about a guy who's roughly the same age. I mean, we're not talking, he's a little bit older than Adams, but we're talking over the same, again, just when we're talking about projection, he has made those gains over the same years of his career.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Adams is, and this is a question I ask about a lot of these prep pitchers is that I don't have the opportunity to see, is this guy athletic? And the athleticism reports on Adams are very good.
Yeah.
It's a good body. It's
That's why he's able to throw strikes. That's why he's...
He's got present control and command. It's playable. He's going to be in the upper minors. So he's a likable prospect. What do you think? Is he a top 100 guy? I doubt it at this point.
I would say I'm skeptical he's going to be a top 100 guy. But we also know that this top 100 is not going to be... We're not debating whether, so who goes two after Chris Bryant in this list? I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
It's down a little bit because we've had a lot of great graduations. I mean, we're not sitting there with Correa and Bryant and guys mm-hmm. like that. So, but that's a good place to wrap this one up. So this is the Monday edition of the Baseball America podcast. JJ Cooper, Hudson Belisky. We do want to remind you, if you enjoyed this, it's a great time to subscribe. We have the top 10 drilling out. If you want all the scouting reports in the top 10s for all 30 organizations, we are 6 in, 24 to go. Hudson will be chatting Tuesday about the White Sox top 10. So if you have questions, send them to him. Just go to baseballamerica.com. You'll see the chat up there. But if you want to subscribe, baseballamerica.com/store. Great time to subscribe right now. You have that. You also have, we're getting ready for the 2017 draft. You know, we had a podcast on Friday talking about some of those players.
Yeah,
Hudson's working on it.
Get fired up because it's
going to be a good draft.
This is my going to be my second full year on the draft beat, and just the content is going to be. I'm very excited for what we're going to be able to do.
It looks like a, especially on the high school side, it's going to be a.
Oh yeah, so it looks like a potentially impactful class. Lots of athletes, a couple intriguing arms. There's a couple shortstops. There's tons of power. There's a lot of speed in this class.
And on the college side, again,
the college side is really good. We talked about the college pitchers in 2015.
This is way better than
this
that.
This is tenfold. I mean, we'll talk about that as we get closer. But the college pitching class is deep in 2017.
But so we will be back with a Rays podcast on Tuesday. Yes, we're bouncing around, but we are getting to the AL East. So for Hudson, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.